Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O Honest One, your present life is the last and the supermost, because in this term of life you have been awarded my ultimate favor. Now you can go to my transcendental abode Vaikuntha by leaving this universe of conditioned living entities. Your visit to me in this lonely place, because of your pure and unflinching devotional service, is a great boon for you. Purport. When a person is fully conversant with knowledge of the Lord, as far as can be known by a perfect living entity in the liberated state, he is allowed to enter into the spiritual sky, where the Vaikuntha planets exist. The Lord was sitting in a lonely place, just about to disappear from the vision of the inhabitants of this universe, and Uddhava was fortunate to see him even at that time, and thus receive the Lord's permission to enter Vaikuntha. The Lord is everywhere at all times, and his appearance and disappearance are merely the experience of the inhabitants of a particular universe. He is just like the sun. The sun does not appear or disappear in the sky. It is only in the experience of men that in the morning the sun rises and in the evening the sun sets. The Lord is simultaneously both in Vaikuntha and everywhere within and without Vaikuntha. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Om Shri Madaya Krishna Prishnaya Bhutale Shriradana Swami Niti Namine. So this is a very nice and sweet verse by Lord Sri Krishna. Uddhava has been describing, we've been hearing Uddhava's final moments with Krishna. The whole episode is one of disappearance, of the annihilation of the Yadus, and then Krishna's own disappearance. And we're really just seeing Krishna and hearing from him just prior to his exit from the world. And here he is casting a special glance of favor upon his dear devotee Uddhava, who has been aspiring for his service and has been serving him and has been engaged in a very friendly and loving mood towards Lord Krishna for a very long time. Not just in this life. We get a hint here that his relationship with Krishna has been developed over many lifetimes. And in the previous verse, which was read yesterday, there's a reference to Uddhava being one of the Vasus, one of the eight Vasus responsible for the universal arrangements. And these are on very, very long timescales. Timescales of Lord Brahma. These are the occupations of these Vasus. And therefore, we understand that at that time, when he was in that role, he desired to have some association with Krishna and to serve him, or to be an associate of him. And therefore then, Krishna remembered that. And then over time, he had a chance to serve him. And therefore he says now that your present life is the last and supermost, because you've been awarded my ultimate favor. So to get Krishna's favor sometimes takes a while. We are accustomed to the promise that we can go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. That's something that drives devotees and motivates them also. And of course it is certainly possible. Our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada has directly said that in pursuance of the promise of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that even a complete lack of typical qualifications is no obstacle if we are able to chant the holy name purely. And so while we keep that in mind, that there is every hope and every chance that we may go back to Godhead in this life, for many people there will be a few more attempts required, because we will probably not do it correctly or fully or to the level expected. There's nothing stopping us but our own determination and our own mindset. No one else can really restrict that. In the modern world, we are very much accustomed to blaming someone else for our problems. It's because of my upbringing. It's because of my birth. It's because of the country I was born in. It's because of the friends I grew up with. It's because of the educational system. It's because of the government. Whoever you can find, you can blame. It's because of the miserable weather. Blame someone or other, just for my predicament or situation now. And of course, some of those may well be factors. They may well be little causes, small factors in the big scheme of things. Because ultimately, each one of those factors has not accidentally appeared. It is there by perfect arrangement according to our karma. Activities that we've done in previous lives and for which we are now getting results. So whilst most people in this world tend to focus on the immediate cause of their problems or happiness, someone who's more long-term minded, more aspiring to be a sadhu, actually thinks about multiple lifetimes and thinks over not just a few lifetimes, but possibly that we have been in this world for millions of lifetimes. And there is a whole accrued balance of karma that is just awaiting to be delivered to us in different doses, both pleasant and unpleasant. And so, for some of us, I don't know what the proportions are, if we are very, very sincere, if we are very together with our devotional service in this life, and we follow all aspects of devotional service, and there is something called half-hen logic, which Srila Prabhupada refers to. A farmer, now we're not endorsing keeping hens and eating them, but you can take the analogy for what it is, that if there is a farmer who has a hen, and the hen produces eggs, so one day the farmer woke up and decided, actually the back part of the hen is productive because it produces the eggs, and the front part is useless, it simply eats all day. So what I'll do, I'll chop off the front because that's an economic drain for me, and I'll keep the back bit which produces the eggs. So now, what do you think would happen? You would have a complete stop to the whole manufacturing process. And so Prabhupada uses that analogy to describe our attempts in devotional life. We may take little bits that we like in devotional life. Maybe some aspect of this, some aspect of that. Maybe we don't like certain cultural aspects, certain aspects from the tradition, after all, which has been the basis or the foundation for this spiritual knowledge to be developed. So Srila Prabhupada, with great difficulty, attempted to establish some of those traditions, those cultures, in a place where the prevailing culture is completely the opposite. Etiquette between devotees, etiquette between individuals, relationships between seniors, juniors, between men and women, all of these are factors which in today's world are given a secondary rating. In the face of my own progress is the most important thing. But it is basically half-hen logic that there is an entire package of measures which is designed to help us overcome our years and lifetimes of engagement in this world, in the world of matter, where we have become hopelessly entangled in her complexities. And each one of those complexities, knots, results in a new life for us, and a new life of difficulty, maybe some pleasure, some pain, all delivered in certain doses. That cycle will continue, because in this life, everything we do produces a reaction. That reaction then produces a certain inclination in the mind, and we develop desires. After all, when you achieve something in this world, you're very rarely satisfied. Your desires then expand onto something else. It's not that you reach a stage where you think, okay, that's it, I've completely finished now. Now I will simply just focus on chanting, reading, or whatever it is, even in a karmic sense, just in simple life. Now something else turns up. And even if you're peaceful, then someone else will inject some thought into your mind that, no, you must be doing this in order to be happy. So in this world, the problem is that each one of those entertainments of the mind produces another birth. That's the serious consequence of it. That every thought, every desire we have will have to be fulfilled through another birth. Of course, in some births you may deal with a lot of them, a lot of desires in one go. But that's the problem. And then as soon as you have to take another birth to fulfill yet another unfulfilled desire from this life or the past, you are then subject to birth, old age, disease and death. In that whole process, and as Kali Yuga progresses, we will then engage in sinful activities. And maybe some pious activities too. And that will result in another birth. So you can see the cycle is designed to be self-perpetuating and goes on indefinitely for millions and millions of years. And so if we follow actually an attempt to accept this process in its entirety, all the elements of it, the elements that are found within our culture, we have of course 9 processes, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Srila Prabhupada says, if one can follow all the 9 processes, that's great. But if you cannot, then do 8 of them. If not, then 7, 6, 5, 4. He says, even one of them, if you follow them, that's sufficient. If someone just perfects their life just by hearing the message of the Bhagavatam, or hearing the holy name, someone else perfects by extensively chanting, preaching, Sankirtan. These are all perfections that will result in a cessation of this cycle of birth and death. But those items should be done within the culture. Srila Prabhupada mentions that if one just chants the holy name but carries on engaged in sinful activities, well, the chanting of that holy name will not produce the desired result. Now some people will say, keep chanting, which is excellent. But at some point that chanter does need to come to a stage of following in its entirety the process that's given, which means a process of surrender, a process of accepting a spiritual master in our lives, a process of engaging in devotional service with the devotees, together with the association of the devotees, to take guidance, to engage in the worship of Radha Gokulananda. We have a great privilege here. Radha Gokulananda are here, installed by Srila Prabhupada himself. If you're looking for any better facilities to engage in Krishna consciousness, you may well be disappointed. Because where the Lord is present, where his devotees are present, where there is a system for worshipping the Lord, that should be grabbed with both hands as quickly as possible and held on. Because there is not really much else in this world other than another opportunity to create another situation for yourself in a future life. So we can take example from Uddhava, that with great patience he wanted to serve the Lord, and over lifetimes he has now engaged in extensive service in this life. He was very, very close to Krishna in this particular life. And that is only by Krishna's mercy. He would be seen as his advisor. Krishna would call Uddhava and ask for his advice on different topics. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What a role the Lord allows his devotee to play. The Lord is complete in all rasas. And of course he remains the Lord and Master at all times, without any question of his position. But sometimes, for the sake of pastimes, for the sake of actually having a lovely, full-bodied relationship with a full spectrum of devotees, he gives them different roles to play. So some become his mother, his father, some become his associates, some become his lovers, some become his servants, some become confidential consultants like Uddhava. And we can see from Uddhava's behavior his extensive absorption in Lord Krishna. When he started these narrations, he was overcome with deep ecstasy. As soon as Vidura questioned him, he was in great ecstasy just recalling the Lord. And that's the depth of feeling he has developed. And so when Krishna says here, now you can go to my transcendental abode. Now you can go, Krishna says. Your time here is over. It's time to go. This is based upon an extensive cultivation of devotional service over a long, long period of time, seeking the Lord's favor, relishing the association of the devotees. It's very interesting that Lord Krishna says, your visit to me in this lonely place, because of your pure and unflinching devotional service, is a great boon for you. I was thinking there's a great parallel between this and our life. Here Krishna has been on Mother Earth, Bhumi, for a number of years, over 100 years, and he has travelled all over the place, Mathura, Vrindavan, Govardhan, Dwarka. These are the places of Krishna's leelas, places of his pastimes. And now he's ended up in Prabhas, where he's going to leave. And it's a comparatively a lonely place. Of course, if you go there today, I did visit several years ago, if you go to Prabhas today, it's a bit more built up. You don't get so much of a sense of an open field or anything like that. But they were constructing a nice temple for Krishna with his final pastimes being depicted. In those times, at least, that would have been conventionally a lonely place. And of course, Krishna didn't want to make a scene in his previous places. So that is how a person leaves, generally. They go somewhere quietly and quit this world in full meditation. But of course, Krishna's quitting this world is not the same as ours. And a visit to Krishna in a lonely place is exactly what we are also attempting in this life. This material world is a very lonely place when you compare it to the standard of being with Krishna and his associates. With Krishna and his associates, there is talk at every moment of how to give pleasure to Krishna, how to relish the company of Krishna, how to serve him in a newer and newer way, how to consider the care of his devotees, how each devotee is looking after the other devotees, all in the different leelas. You read about constantly many, many leelas in the 10th canto. It's a recurring theme. And so that's the spiritual world, where of course we know so many wonderful things happen under the direction of Vrindadevi. Many arrangements are made for the devotees, for the Lord, for the gopis, for the gopas, to all engage in a relationship activity with Krishna. So in comparison to that, this place, this material world, is a very lonely place. Because Krishna's presence is not there. Krishna's service is not there. Krishna's devotees are not always there. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki. Until Srila Prabhupada came, that would have been an accurate description of this world in general. In the modern times at least. Devoid of a connection with Krishna, a very, very lonely place. So Prabhupada writes in his prayers on board the Jaladuta, just as he was reaching Boston, why have you brought me here to this place? He writes like that, why have you brought me here, Krishna, to this place? Srila Prabhupada was happy to accept that austerity, leaving behind, as he described, the comforts of Vrindavan. The comfort of the spiritual potency of Vrindavan, to come to a place where the worship of Krishna was the last thing on people's minds and most people weren't even aware of it. And whatever practices were going on were largely done in a very whimsical or very superficial level by different practitioners of different faiths. And so to have the chance to engage in real devotional service in this lonely place is actually a great boon for us. By Srila Prabhupada. And with that boon, we actually have a chance to be in Krishna's presence. It is a lonely, dark, damp, miserable place, the world. If you actually analytically study it, that is an accurate description. Of course, sometimes it's nice, it's sunny, it's fun. But then it will change. It will change soon after that. And so we need to have a realistic approach to life. Where there is not Krishna, it is considered to be darkness. Right? Can anyone remember the strap line on top of Bhakti Godhead? How does it go? yes, come out of the darkness into light. But where there is darkness, yeah, it's a nice one. Read it. It's quite a tongue twister. Where there is Krishna, there is light. In the absence of light, there is darkness. Darkness is nescience. That's the general gist of it. Without Krishna, there is darkness and nescience. And that's why it is said that in the Bhagavatam, Krishna swadham upagate dharma jnana dibisaha kalo nashta drisham esha purana arko dunoditaha. Now that Krishna has gone to his own abode, taking with him knowledge and all religiosity, what is left in this dark age of Kali? Well, the Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen like the sun. Puran arko adunoditaha. It has arisen just like the sun to give light. So in this age, now that Krishna is personally leaving, as it described in this very pastime, we don't have the personal association of Krishna anymore, other than through his form as the deity form. And then depending on our level of practice through the holy name and through any of the processes that we follow, the Bhagavatam is a very easily accessible way to access Krishna, in which discussions of Krishna take place on each and every page. And so in this lonely place, somehow we're approaching Krishna. And the result of that is, Krishna says, because of your pure, unflinching devotional service, this is a great boon for you. A great boon. Most people's idea of a great boon is lots of wealth, maybe great health, beauty, opulence, strength, power, whatever it is that people want. That's most people's idea of receiving a great boon. But the real great boon is to go back to Krishna and serve him with no other agenda, to be completely at the shelter of his lotus feet, and to simply have nothing else in our life but his service. Because that is actually so much more than anything else we can introduce into our life from this material world. Now somehow our process is very, very wonderful, because we have a chance to practice renouncing the world and its complexities and its multiple agendas from different sources, whilst at the same time living in the world. And it's very interesting that we can engage in the activities of the world using the objects of this world. But if we engage those items properly, even including our mind, intelligence and ego, which is faulty, you can say. The best way to describe it is it's faulty. It's been infected by a certain agent called lust. This lust has covered, in the Gita it is explained, lust has covered three things: the mind, intelligence and senses, right? And through them it keeps the living entity constrained, contained, restricted. As long as we surrender to that, the desire to keep enjoying an object of this material world, or a concept or a facility, that is something that keeps us here. So we have a chance to utilize even our faulty mind, intelligence, senses, and engage them in Krishna's service. We can use our body, we can use everything to engage in the service of the Lord. And if we do that, then we have great success. As it said in the 10th canto, Tatenu kampasu samikshamanam munjana evatma kritam vibhakam ridvagva purbhir vidadham namaste jiveyato mukti pade sadaya bhak. It is said that if one approaches or engages in devotional service, gives up their different attachments or occupations in this world and surrenders to Krishna, that is a great benefit. But even if such a person later on, due to immaturity or immature practice, somehow falls down, there is absolutely no loss. There is no loss. And if such a person conducts their life simply accepting and receiving without complaint the consequences of their karma from previous lives, then such a person becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of God. Right? If one patiently tolerates the results of one's past misdeeds, that's the exact phrase used, patiently tolerates the results of one's past misdeeds, then one actually has a chance to go to the kingdom of God, because it has become his rightful claim, it says. It's become one's rightful claim. So that's what's required in this life. It's a life which gives us challenges from all directions. And the majority of those challenges take us away from devotional service, materially speaking. But if somehow we just tolerate those, somehow try to make each moment an opportunity to seek a different or a better, a higher level of experience, of a connection with Krishna, then at the end of this life, we will be much better situated. If we perfect the process, we will get this boon. We will get this boon where Krishna says, "You have been awarded my ultimate favor. Now you can go to my transcendental abode, Vaikuntha." That may happen in this life. If it doesn't, we can simply take inspiration from Uddhava's own journey, from Narad Muni's journey, from the journey of all the great acharyas, saints, devotees, that it will definitely happen at some point in the future. So I'll stop there, and I'll see if there are any questions, comments. Yes, Prabhuji.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for this presentation. In the beginning you were talking about Krishna's disappearance and disappearance of the Yadus, right? Krishna's disappearance and disappearance of the Yadus.
Mm.
So I was just wondering why at all so much violence, etc., was needed. Why? Because Dwarka is a dham, right? And it is said that in the holy dhams, the pastimes are always going on, either in the manifest form or in the unmanifest form. Kona kona bhagyavan dekhi bare paaye. Those who are fortunate, they can see. So, I was just thinking that instead of all this violence happening, Krishna could have just caused them to disappear, right? Because they'll anyhow exist in their unmanifest form over there. So why at all Krishna chose this particular form of disappearance?
We have to be very careful when we attempt to be another Krishna and try to design a new pastime for Krishna. It's Krishna's pastime. He's the Supreme Lord. He's completely swarat, completely independent. It's how he chooses to do things. He's not bound by any regulation, any rule, any law, any idea, any position in this world. He doesn't have to conform or comply with any of it, because he is completely outside the entire jurisdiction. So every one of Krishna's pastimes that takes place, you could potentially conceive of a dozen other alternative scenarios, in which case that result could possibly have been done. But we'd be making a big mistake, because such a discussion won't lead to any benefit at all. So Krishna's pastimes are to be taken as they are. And from those pastimes, there are multiple lessons that we can learn. Every time Krishna does something, something comes out, a different lesson. And then there are different layers of lessons.
Yeah, so that's my exact question, that what lesson could be drawn out of this?
Lesson could be drawn out of this? Well, also we should be careful, because not all of Krishna's pastimes are meant to be lesson-producing for us. That is part of Krishna's right, that he can do what he wants. Now, as human beings, or as practitioners of spiritual culture, we have to adopt great discrimination in deciding which of Krishna's pastimes are lessons for us, and which of them are simply meant to be observed, meditated upon, and marveled at by us. And that is a great skill. Because if we look at Krishna's dealings with the gopis, and we start drawing conclusions from that, or we start looking at how Krishna arranged for his yadus, his own associates, to disappear. Of course, many reasons are given as to why they disappeared. That was his arrangement to reduce the burden of the earth. And no one else could defeat them in that sense. Krishna also had to make an arrangement to leave himself. And in the purport, Prabhupada says that, just as the sun does not appear or disappear in the sky, so Krishna also doesn't really appear or disappear. Actually, this analogy here in the temple room is very nice. You can see the curtains. Right? Krishna is there. Sometimes the curtains are open, sometimes the curtains are closed. Sometimes he's manifest to us, sometimes he's not. That's like a mini analogy of this one in the bigger world and of the sun. So here Krishna appears on a planet, engages in pastimes, and then disappears. For Krishna, it's just another adventure. Just another adventure. For the person on the other side, it's an occasion of great lamentation, distress, and lessons, potentially. So how we see things in terms of their meaning for us and our lives should be completely different to the descriptions of how Krishna sees things. Here Krishna says, or here it's mentioned, that it says, Krishna is just like the sun. The Lord is simultaneously in Vaikuntha, everywhere within and without Vaikuntha. And he was peaceful and pleasant. If you read some of the verses prior to that, it's described that the Lord was very cheerful. He was sitting under a banyan tree, resting his back against the tree, and he was very cheerful. The Lord is simply looking forward to his next adventure. For us as devotees or practitioners, we should be a little more sober than that. Because we should be aware that when our time comes to leave this world, our departure is nothing like Krishna's. His janma karma cha me divyam, that is transcendental, completely different. Ours, if we don't get it right, will result in another birth. So that is to be taken with great seriousness. And so the idea that people say, you know, sometimes, I'm looking forward to death. They say that. They say that to us. I'm not afraid of death, they say. Well, that is another sign of deep ignorance. Because actually, if they knew what death is, they should be terrified. Not just slightly afraid. They should be completely terrified as to the consequences of what's going to happen next to them, based upon their previous actions, their thoughts, their desires. That whole network is going to deliver to them something in their next life which they didn't bargain for and they didn't want. So they should be very, very concerned about that. But life is sometimes about keeping ourselves in a state of illusion. Actually, a lot of life is like that. You just disregard certain factors. So spiritual life is about coming into the light, which means giving up nescience. Darkness is nescience, light is knowledge. So even if the knowledge is painful, even if what I'm saying is painful, that we have a large excess baggage of problems that's going to be delivered to us. Now someone could say, oh, just enjoy yourself. Well, you have that choice. But if you actually take that seriously, then we will engage in a process that will change that permanently for us. We will engage in a process of devotion that will destroy that baggage and connect us to Krishna. That's our desire. Yes, Prabhuji. Mike.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 6, Text 30. Translation is, if I were to leave this world without withdrawing the overly proud members of the Yadu dynasty, the whole world would be destroyed by the deluge of their unlimited expansion. And in the purport, there's an elaboration of what this means and how it's true in one sense, but in another sense, it's a welcome burden for the earth, but Krishna still chose to remove. In the purport, it's explained, they would go mad in separation from Krishna. And they would just go crazy, the Yadus.
Yes, that's what happened in Vrindavan, right? Krishna left, the gopis basically went mad, completely lost the plot. They didn't know what to do without Krishna. And so, yes, multiple factors are there. And as you mentioned, very nice that you mentioned the different layers there. But even in the Bhagavatam, you're reading one verse. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj has mentioned that when you study scripture, be very careful, because sometimes it is written in a code form. The full messages are not revealed on the literal reading. There is far more depth and substance behind them. And in fact, different analysis, different discussions from the acharyas reveal that certain verses discuss actually the pastimes of Radha and Krishna without them appearing to have any connection to that particular topic. Somehow it happens like that. So in the morning prayers we sing, right? We sing the different, that the spiritual master is engaged in the kunjas of Vrindavan, right? Natikeli Siddhya, right? He's in the groves of Vrindavan. The disciples are assisting him, picking flowers or whatever it is, and making confidential arrangements for the Lord. And so then when Srila Prabhupada was asked, so how do we understand this verse? Srila Prabhupada said, this verse means you should go out and distribute books. That's the purport for us. Don't worry about meditating in the groves of Vrindavan for now. For now, there's a different job. Work first, then samadhi later, as Prabhupada said. So we have to first of all appreciate that there are layers of understanding. And how a mature person reads and has the verses revealed to them is quite different to our first reading of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is non-different to Krishna himself. It's Krishna himself. Krishna pratyaksha evahi. It is directly Krishna. So, yes. Paramah Prabhu?
In the text itself and also in the purport, there's just mention of Vaikuntha. Oh. So that's interesting because Krishna is speaking that you will attain my abode.
Yeah.
So why isn't Goloka mentioned, or why isn't Dwarka or Mathura like that? So, Prabhupada never mentions once even in the purport. It's just Vaikuntha, Vaikuntha, Vaikuntha. So just wondering your thoughts on that.
So Vaikuntha is also used in a general sense, in the sense of the spiritual world. Literally it means a place of no anxiety. That includes all the planets of the Vishnu expansions, the different forms of Lord Vishnu, and of course the Goloka with its different divisions there. And of course we know the different gradations of this world. Goloka namni nijadhamni tale chatasya devi mahesha haridama suteshu teshu tete prabhava nichaya vihitascha yena govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. So this is the hierarchy, Goloka. Then you have Haridham, which is all the Vaikuntha planets. Then you have Maheshtham, Lord Shiva's abode. Then Devidham, which is this material world. Vaikuntha and above can all be considered Vaikuntha. And different persons in the Bhagavatam have different destinations. Bhishma there, for instance, was meditating on the Lord in his four-armed form. And he would have returned to the Lord in a suitable manner for him. Many of the interactions between the devotees, Dhruva Maharaj, are more with the Vishnu expansions of the Lord, rather than Krishna, the person, directly. And so it doesn't really, you can say it's the superset within which you've got Goloka, and according to Krishna's desire and according to the particular rasa of that individual, they will go there. This doesn't exclude the fact that Uddhava would go to Goloka. It doesn't exclude it. Yes? Give him the mic.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the lesson. What happens when a spiritual master disappears, taking into account that he takes responsibility for a part of the disciples' karma?
Oh. What happens to the disciple particularly? Well, for the spiritual master, we know that the spiritual master engages in the Lord's service. He's an eternal associate of the Lord. That's the definition of someone we accept as a spiritual master. And for the disciple, there is really no change in one sense. We know from Srila Prabhupada, he spoke about Vani and Vapu, the messages, the instructions of the Lord and the personal association. Now we very much need the personal association to inspire us, because you need a living example of a devotee just to give us hope that it's possible. Because you can read from the book and you can read so many stories, but if there's no demonstration of what it means to be a devotee, we can be lost sometimes. So the vani, the instructions, they remain intact. And the spiritual master has made a promise and agrees to take your karma. That is a serious responsibility. It's a serious duty that the spiritual master takes on. And for the disciple, it should be an item of great appreciation and gratitude. And the disciples should conduct themselves in a way that will not cause further trouble to the spiritual master. And so many of our contemporary spiritual masters and from the past have mentioned that sometimes, you know, when they have sickness or illness, it is due to the misbehavior of their disciples. So, yes, the karma is basically taken by the spiritual master. But there's something interesting that happens under the arrangement of Krishna. Of course, the verse I mentioned from the 10th canto does say that we may still have to suffer the results of our past misdeeds. But that no longer, if you think about it carefully, that no longer counts as karma in that sense. Krishna is clever enough that he can use items of our previous karma and deliver them to us in certain doses that will allow us to move step forward, one at a time, in Krishna consciousness. Normally in the material world, when your karma is delivered to you, it causes complete confusion and complete mess, and will probably cause you to create even more karma. Well, if you're in the association of devotees and a certain dose of karma is given to you, you will know how to process that correctly. Because maybe something does need to happen. Maybe our pride has increased a bit, so Krishna now needs to knock it with some incident or some situation. Now, if we learn from that correctly, we've progressed. So when the spiritual master leaves, the vapu has gone, but the vani is there and all the instructions are there intact. So if we follow Prabhupada's instructions as the priority, be very careful if someone comes to you and says, Prabhupada said this. Prabhupada said, my instructions are in my books. The books are the authoritative basis. And while we are fortunate to hear and have the association of Srila Prabhupada's own associates, those who spent time with him, we should also hear carefully from them and actually accept their words with great, great respect. But Srila Prabhupada's words in his books remain the unchangeable standard. They describe the philosophical reality. And so those should always be seen as topmost in our minds. There was one hand here, Mataji.
Thank you. He was one of the eight Vasus.
Yes.
Okay. Who were the eight Vasus? And was Uddhava one of the babies that Ganga threw in the water when this pastime happened? Must have been.
Yes, I was actually trying to find details of Uddhava's previous identity. I couldn't find it. The eight Vasus are the different controllers of the material realm. The sun, the moon, Agni, the different elements. They are the Vasus, and they have names also, eight of them. I could not find which one of them Uddhava was at which time. And they also change. These things also change. In different manvantaras, different days of Brahma, these also change. So which one it could have been referring to here, we don't actually know. Whether it was even in this particular manvantara or not, a different day of Brahma. Yes, he was in the past. It's a role, you know, just like Indra changes. If you look at each time there's a Manu, there's a new Indra, there's a new Saptarishi set, a new set of seven sages, a new Indra, and a new Brahma, and a new set of pastimes. That happens in each of the 14 Manus just within one day of Brahma. So now imagine you multiply that by all the days of Brahma, you have a completely comprehensive set of persons involved in his pastimes. So at one point, while Uddhava was a Vasu, he had this desire. That could have been a long, long time ago. Prabhuji. Oh, David.
Thank you, Boo. In your class, you mentioned that Sri Prabhupada came to the West and he gave the people a chance to engage in real devotional service. So I'm just like wondering how can we, in terms, you know, to claim that, you know, because there's different traditions where people would devote themselves to God for their whole lives and things like this. So how can we define real devotional service in that sense? Yeah.
Yes. Well, pure devotional service is defined as that service which is unmotivated, uninterrupted, is solely for the pleasure of the Lord, has nothing to do with any goals, agendas, or missions for enjoyment within this world or in the heavenly planets. If you analyze other practices with that viewpoint, you may well find that they do not meet that characteristic, at least in terms of the behavior of the practitioners. While the goals within the different religious paths are ultimately to take someone to the Supreme Lord, there are ultimately many, many stages also which are not of that caliber. And those attractions, the desire, the ability to enjoy in the heavens, things like that, these are not the descriptions of pure devotional service that are revealed in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. So we can very easily do our own analysis. In each tradition, whatever the tradition has offered, and each tradition does offer something special, there have been greatly advanced persons present in each tradition also. Sometimes more advanced than the common propaganda of that tradition. That's often the case, right? Different religions go through different phases, and whatever the current order of the day is, the current preaching direction, you will still have, and those we see have been routinely contaminated over the times. In practically all religious traditions, the original teachings have been modified, made easy, made less rigid, made more trivial, even removed in some cases. You can do that own analysis of the different faiths. But there are always practitioners who actually get it, who actually understand what pure devotional service to the Lord actually is. And so that's a metric or a looking glass that we can use to decide which traditions are en masse propagating exclusive devotional service to the Supreme Father. It's something that we can do. It's a difference between one or two individuals versus an entire movement where everyone is following that as their goal. That's the difference.
Thank you so much. My question was, you mentioned multiple times that we should be careful in terms of how we read the scriptures and that some verses are coded in this way. Also, I was wondering, within our dealings with others, devotees in general, maybe we should also be careful and not misreading situation and misreading devotees, who they are, or like their activities, things like that. So can you explain a little bit more on how to be careful, not puffed up, thinking that we know that's what a situation means when actually we don't know?
Yeah, that is, to be aware that we do that is also an item, is an indication of progress. To be aware that we sometimes make judgments about a situation where we are totally unqualified to judge, but it's there because it's our nature. To realize we do that is the first very important step. The next stage is just to simply to try not to do it. This assessment will, it's also a dynamic which will change as we mature through spiritual life. First of all, when we're very new to spiritual life, our nature is that we are naturally submissive, we are naturally humble, eager to serve, eager to please, and we basically absorb everything around us like a sponge. Generally, it is easier to have a healthy, respectful attitude in those days, but actually, as we mature, that should deepen, that should become even stronger. But just then what will happen is that as you mature, your discrimination will also increase. Your ability to know clearly what is right and what is wrong will also increase. And then we'll be able to look at behaviors or different devotees who are each at different stages in the progress. And we will be able to identify more clearly which traits or which behaviors are actually an indicator of that person's struggle at the moment, rather than their actual situation. Someone may behave in a certain way, and it may not be what's expected according to the rule book. But that phase may be something they need to go through in order to get to their next stage. Because Srila Prabhupada was so tolerant with all those who came to him. And no one jumps from being a complete sense enjoyer to being a pure devotee on the platform of pure uttama bhakti from one day to the next. It's a whole transformation process. So one very healthy way to put our assessment into perspective is just to see that every single person is at a different stage of the ladder. And they each have their different flavors of service that they will, even at the end, offer to Krishna. Because no two people are the same, even in their perfected stage. They will be in different rasas. They will have different services. They will have a different mood, something special that they will bring to Krishna. So we need to have an understanding of how to accept the diverse range of services that are possible to Krishna, whilst at the same time never forgetting the core strength that allows each of those diversities to manifest. If you start from a position of diversity where you allow anything and everything to go on, or any misdecisions that are made, we accept them as now being correct, then you don't end up with natural devotional diversity. You end up with simply a confused process. You cannot progress with a confused process. The process has to be very strictly followed. Four regulative principles, chanting the holy name, careful dealings with devotees, according to so many of them, I mentioned a few different ways, different categories of dealings with devotees, different types of persons, senior, junior, elder, more advanced, time of initiation, the spiritual master, actual knowledge, wisdom, position. These are all factors that are considered when you make an assessment as to who is senior, who is junior. And so it's best to not do that too much. Generally, it's best not to do that too much. And only when you really need to, you do that. Because also, you know, we have a certain etiquette to be followed. Senior should be given priority. So sometimes you need to make that assessment. Who is the more senior person? Who should be offered the greater respect or the prime position or something like that? It should not be everyone is equal and everyone gets the equal chance. It's not our culture at all. Krishna's world, just from the fact that everyone is on different rungs of the ladder, where is the notion of saying everyone is the same?
Thank you so much. Just therefore, because ISKCON itself has gone through many changes in terms of like being able to assess what is right or wrong in any situation is something very like difficult, I find it. So do you think that so far we have done a good job at it as like community, as like a movement?
As a community? Oh yes, it didn't come through, did it? Yeah.
So I'm going to try to repeat this. Can you?
Yeah.
So I was asking that it seems like it's very difficult to make those kind of assessments in any situation. And I was wondering if Prabhu found that within ISKCON, because ISKCON has gone through many changes over the years, that if we have done a good job at being able to assess, you know, what is the right direction to take, what is, you know, like this. So I was wondering what Prabhu thought about that.
You can say ISKCON has gone through many changes, but you can also say nothing has changed. Radha Gokulananda is still here since 1973. Their worship is taking place every day without fail. Bhagavatam class is going on. Now the board has disappeared. Okay, that's an adjustment. I mean, the board was actually quite a nice service for someone. So you to actually write shastra is actually an item of purification for the devotee who does it. But you can look around and you will see many changes like that. Those aren't the main changes. The heart of it is what remains in service to Krishna. The mission, because it Srila Prabhupada accepted many devotees into his mission. In some cases he gave responsibility to those who were not really of a capability or qualification to hold those roles. And those things have come about, have become apparent over several years afterwards. That's definitely been there. But in the interests of propagating the mission, Prabhupada took risks. Now with greater maturity in terms of spiritual leadership, maturity in terms of management, maturity in terms of giving support to individuals in their own lives, we can definitely say ISKCON has moved forward, because any issues that have come up have been addressed, or at least people are trying to address them. Some tricky issues, it's also sometimes we may expect those currently in charge to make everything perfect. But let's just ask the question, am I a perfect servant? Ram, when Lord Ram is present, we call his realm Ram Rajya, right? The kingdom of Lord Ram. But if you then have to also look at the citizens, the quality of the citizens in Ayodhya. They're of a certain caliber. Nowhere close to the citizens of any state today. Yet, when you have a citizen of that caliber, they will get Lord Ram as their ruler. If we ourselves are not of a very high caliber, we can't demand Prithu Maharaj, or Lord Krishna, or Srila Prabhupada, or someone else in charge. It's not fair to demand it. When we ourselves are so deficient, it's not fair to demand that those who have taken the very difficult job of trying to lead this movement should be perfect instantly. If you applied that rule that they should be perfect, there would be no one leading this movement, and you wouldn't even have going on what we have today. But somehow the processes are evolving, they are becoming more robust. And hopefully one thing I've seen is that there is a great increase in teaching and studying of our literature. That is ultimately the foundation of our movement. And that has been absent in some years, some decades, to a large degree en masse. That is now changing. And that educational aspect is very much expanding. And that is perhaps the number one way in which current and future problems can be addressed. Because if we simply read in detail, I mean, there are something like 18,000 verses in the Bhagavatam, maybe 15, 16, 17,000 purports by Srila Prabhupada. That's a lot of purports, a lot of instructions from Prabhupada. So imagine if someone doesn't take the time and trouble to read that, but starts trying to arrange some system within ISKCON. Will they do so with a full understanding of what Prabhupada wanted? It's actually an essential requirement to be fully conversant with Srila Prabhupada's words. And then you will see how all our attempts to serve, to steer the movement, they will be more and more wholesome, you can say. But we should also be strong and resistant to change. Prabhupada said, he said in specifically in terms of the West, he came to the West and he said, you like to keep changing things. Yeah. It's that quote, isn't it? You like to keep changing things. It's a disease. That you can't stick to something and follow it. Well, our tradition doesn't exist if we keep changing it. There are traditions, there are cultures, there are practices that maybe were instituted at the time this temple was set up. It is not appropriate to try to change them. It is a culture which has allowed devotees to flourish and grow in spiritual life. And so these challenges will be there. Because then perhaps committees will make decisions based upon short-term interests, not quite with a full understanding of what Prabhupada's words are. This may happen. It may not happen. All we can say is that as time goes on, as they become more learned, more knowledgeable, it should happen less and less. That's our hope. And so we'll hopefully progress towards a good stage. But ultimately, despite all of this, the real focus should be on us. Because the movement will move, it's meant to move, and capture every single person in this world. So the movement will have to extend its arms to reach out to every single person and make avenues for them to come. That will mean that the movement will be considerably more varied than you see it now, if we are truly to achieve our goal of reaching everyone. But beyond and above all that is our own progress. Because do you want to be hanging around here for several more births in Kali Yuga, trying to achieve a kind of a nirvana, a perfection of movement and management? Because it's not going to be easier next birth. Kali Yuga is progressing, it's going to be even worse. The tendency to destroy whatever culture we have will be even stronger in the next life. So best we emphasize strongly our, just grab hold of whatever is still here and practice it fully. and then try not to come back again, if Krishna allows. So we'll take one last comment, Mataji, and then... Yeah.
Just try to see it as a hospital. There's different patients in a hospital, like cancer patients and also people who sprained an ankle. They may also be in the hospital. So as patients in this hospital, we shouldn't focus on other people's diseases. We just have to get cured by, as the Prabhu said, the philosophy and following what Srila Prabhupada set in stone. No one can move that anywhere. And then get out of this hospital.
That's interesting, because at the same time that we should not focus on those diseases, we have a movement that is meant for sankirtan, to try to help others. So how do we do both?
Part of the cure of you getting out of the hospital, following the spiritual master's instructions, is doing this. Become yourself fixed up, and healthy, and then propagate. You don't do it to save the living entities as such. You do it because your spiritual master wants you to do it.
Yes.
And in the process, you're getting so much spiritual health, and you're getting taste, and you get into progress, and all these things. Don't focus on others so much as you focus on yourself in relationship with the spiritual master and Krishna. Because if you don't get that health and mercy, you cannot give anything to anybody. You can just spread your disease around. And that is a great mistake. Always think hospital. That is a very good meditation. Very good meditation.
Yes.
Yeah. It's cool.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.